This is listener-supported WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington.
Yo, Chris, what you doing out of school?
Yo, man, they just suspended me, McBoo.
Where are they suspended? The teacher?
Yeah, man, I'm getting so sick of this, man. They teaching us about nothing, man. You know what the bottom line is for black people out here? It's quite simple. You must learn. In a song, let me demonstrate the force of knowledge. Knowledge reigns supreme. The ignorant is ripped to smithereens. What do you mean when you say I'm rebellious? Cause I don't accept everything that you're telling us. What are you selling us? The creator dwelling us. I sit in your unknown class while you're failing us. I failed your class cause I ain't with your reasoning. You're trying to make me you by seasoning. Up my mind with C. Jane Run. See John walk in a hardcore New York. Come on now, that's like a chocolate cow. It doesn't exist, no way, no how. It seems to me that in a school this ebony, African history should be pumped up steadily, but it's not. And this has got to stop. See spot, run, run, get spot. Insulting to a black mentality, a black way of life or a jet black family. So I include with one concern that you must learn.
Just like I told you.
You must learn. Believe that if you're teaching history, deal with straight up facts, no mystery. Teach the student what needs to be taught, cause black and white kids both take shorts. When one doesn't know about the other one's culture, ignorance swoops down like a vulture. Cause you don't know that you ain't just a janitor. No one told you about Benjamin Banneker, a brilliant black man that invented the almanac. Can't you see what KRS is coming at? With Eli Whitney, Haile Selassie, Granville Woods made the walkie-talkie. Louis Latimer improved on Edison. Charles Drew did a lot for medicine. Garrett Morgan made the traffic lights. Harriet Tubman freed the slaves at night. Madam C.J. Walker made the straightening comb. But you won't know this if you weren't shown. The point I'm getting at, it might be harsh, is we're just walking around brainwashed. See what I'm saying? It's not to diss a man. We need the 89 school system, one that caters to a black return, because you must learn.
Blessings to the PFW family, to the DMV. This is Baba Ize, and if it is 6 o'clock and you are hearing BDP and you must learn, then you ought to know that you are at one of the smartest shows on the Pacifica catalog. You know, others might say that they are the most dangerous or the coolest show. We like to think of ourselves as one of the smartest shows because we focus upon liberatory education, that is emancipatory education, education that's going to help free our minds, as opposed to that type of education that focuses on maintaining the status quo or just indoctrinating. And so today we're going to talk some of the mechanisms that seek to keep folk indoctrinated. However, I want to first thank all of our listeners who this radio show, not even just radio show, the radio station, to have been on the air for 40 going strong. Thank all of our listeners who called in to PFW, and particularly this show, You Must Learn. Again, you know, we are bringing important educational matters from many educational experts. And so if you feel that that is valuable, then thank you all for, you know, helping to support. All right. We usually begin our You Must Learn show with a Today in Black. And so I want to start off with this being March the 11th with this Black History fact of today was the day that the first Black woman's Broadway show opened in 1959 in Lorraine Hansberry's Arena. And you had starring some of the stars were Sid, Claudia McNeil as the mom, Ruby Dee. This was a great show, and it went on to even be transferred into being put on the air or put in other formats so that folk might be able to see it. So A Raisin in the Sun, today, first Black woman's Broadway show, which I think is quite apropos to lift up during Women's History Month. All right, so we want to go ahead and we're going to open up the phone lines. And if folk, you know, interested in some of the, you know, we put out, check us out on Twitter at AYIZES. You'll see our feed with our updates on Today in Black History. And what I want to do today is open the phone lines, 202-588-0893. And what we're going to do is look at some educational issues that are happening in the, that's happening around us. You know, right now there's this big push folk back in school in person. They are feeling that, you know, conditions are safe to bring students back. You know, I want to definitely hear from our listeners what you think about that. We are asking folk to give us a call, 202-588-0893. Not only what's happening with the push to bring students back to school in person. I know an earlier show we had the president of the Washington Teachers Union in talking about some of the teachers' position. And, you know, Liz Davies let it be known that many times teachers aren't at the table. And so that was a concern of theirs. So if you have any thoughts about the whole back to school piece, I've, you know, heard arguments on both sides. And so I'm sure that that is pressing. Now, one of the things that I wanted to do also, we had a really good edition of Teaching Tolerance, which actually is a publication by, in fact, the publication is getting ready to going to be changing their name to be called Learning for Justice. And they have been covering some really pressing educational matters. They're sponsored by the Southern Poverty Law Center. And good issue topics featured in the spring 2021 edition. They're focusing upon white supremacy in education. And one of the articles that I wanted to lift up, one was on the classical roots of white supremacy. Now, this one was an interesting article. It's written by Danny Bostic. And it's in the, you know, again, the spring 2021 edition. And if you could, you could actually go and check out their website, tolerance.org, for educators. I think you can get this magazine free. And again, they're sponsored by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Now, I was on a particular article because I remember when I was in college, the whole issue around folk not learning their history and the contributions that many cultures bring to the table was hotly debated. And I thought it was settled at this point. So I was surprised to read this article. And so I'm going to share just a little bit about the article with you all. So again, this is by Danny Bostic. The article is titled The Classical Roots of White Supremacy. Title: A Whitewashed History of the Ancient World Lays the Foundation for White Supremacy Across the Curriculum. The author opens up with, in Latin, collectively known as classics for most of my adult life. And then continues a little later on. You know, he said, I brought into the value of classics promoted in pamphlets from the American Classical League, ACL, and give ill consequences to positioning ancient Greece and Rome as the foundation of Western civilization. Question standard of quality for everything from literature to sculpture to architecture, especially when Western civilization is aligned with whiteness. In schools, the glorification of classics, and again, that would be great Greek, Greco-Roman classics, and it is a toxic combination. And he goes on, the author goes on to continue. There is a centuries-long tradition of white Americans abusing classics to justify enslavement, anti-Black racism. Even now, classic instruction today often supports a sanitized, inaccurate version of bondage. Oh, the author goes on to continue. As late as 2019, events held under the National Junior Classic League, NJCL, brought brand featured fundraising auction. Students posing as enslaved people were sold to the highest bidder. The NJCL is not a rogue organization. It's part of the American Classical League, the professional organization for teachers for Greek and Latin languages, literatures, and culture. Recently, the ACL, and again, this is Danny Bostic, the ACL acknowledged that it has been involved in perpetuating and tolerated acts of racism and intolerance within the organization. Today, high school Latin classrooms are overwhelmingly white, even in schools. And then the College Board reveals that only 3.62 of the AP Latin exam test takers in the last decade were Black. The author goes on to continue under a subheading that says, whitewashing the classics curriculum. In 1933, historian Carter G. Woodson wrote that the education system dismisses the Negro as a non-entity. The author continues, Black students are taught to admire Hebrew, Greek, Latin, Teton, and to despise the African. And the author then goes on to continue, when I learned history of medicine, I learned that the Greeks and Romans invented sanitation practices. The author then goes on to continue a little further down. I learned that Hippocrates invented the standard of medical care. The author goes on a little further. Across education, curriculum signals the superiority of knowledge from ancient Greece and Rome. In math classes, for example, Euclid and Pythagoras figure prominently. Now, again, I'm sharing this because I was surprised to read the article. You know, at one point, the author goes on to say that, you know, in interviewing some other students, that it was in college where they first encountered a more balanced, critical approach around history and human achievement. And, you know, I remember in college, you know, reading works by George G.M. James, Stolen Legacy, with the subtitle Greek Philosophy is Stolen Egyptian Philosophy, where, in fact, just to that same point around Pythagoras, you know, George G.M. James goes on to point out in Stolen Legacy on a chapter about the Egyptians educated the Greeks. This is chapter 4. Says on page 43, it is said that Pythagoras traveled frequently to Egypt for the purpose of his education. And in fact, George G.M. James goes on to demonstrate how, you know, how is it that Pythagoras is credited with coming up with certain formulas, where you see some of these formulas actually being used to have built the pyramids. And so, you know, to credit that to people who came thousands of years after those pyramids were built is an erasure of a whole people's contribution to philosophy, to mathematics. And, you know, also if you read some of the works of Dr. Charles Finch, Echoes from the Darkland is one of his books, you know, it definitely helps to tease out how many of the ancient Egyptians had developed sanitary practices and even were doing very extensive medical procedures. And so again, for this still to be promoted in a new millennia to be is mind boggling, you know. So whether it's, you know, checking out Stolen Legacy or Black Athena or Sheikh Anta Diop's, you know, African origins of civilization. I mean, there's so many works that demonstrate, again, their contribution. But let me continue. I'm getting ahead of myself. And again, you know, if anybody is interested in this, as I am, you know, please give us a call, 202-588-0893. You know, definitely would love to talk about this as well as back to school, your area. But let me continue on again with Danny Bostic's article on the classical roots of white supremacy. The author goes on to continue. Traditional humanities curriculum associates multiculturalism with modernity, as if before we had the modern world, we had a white world. Henry Cotty Miller, assistant professor of English education at SUNY Brockport, goes on to talk about how works like Gilgamesh are positioned as the start of the constructed West. Miller continues, most English curriculum doesn't even include ancient writers from Africa or Asia. Instead, the author continues, the Odyssey has universal themes. Chinua Achebe spoke to this phenomenon in 1974, where Achebe said, in the nature of things, the work of a Western writer is automatically informed by universality. It is only others who must strain to achieve it. So again, we have several, many different authors contributing to helping to demonstrate how people from around the world contributed to world knowledge. And so it is, I would agree with the author, toxic to go ahead and claim and glorify, you know, just those areas that, so, you know, Greece and Rome as being the foundation for the classics. The author continues, beyond the classroom, those framings have a real world impact. Curtis Dozier, an assistant professor of Greek and Roman studies at Vassar College, directs Pharos, a project that documents the ways classic is deployed by white supremacists, and that's, you know, still happening to this day. He goes on to say, those who have historically deployed and exploited classics to justify white dominance have included American enslavers, Hitler and Mussolini, and members of modern white identity groups. And so again, these things have real consequences. As the author Danny Bostic points out, they go on, author goes on to point out that we would do well to have educators presenting a more expansive view, decentering ancient Greece and Rome to stress that they were one part of the ancient world, not, and I'm going to underscore, not the ancient world. The authors, you know, again, I'm going to read that again. The author says, decentering ancient Greece and Rome to stress that they were one part of the ancient world, not the ancient world. disrupting the idea that Europe has a monopoly on civilization and progress. Again, this is some things that we need to do with our students today. But the author continues, educators need to teach students, and this is a little further on, to be critical consumers of what they're learning beyond our classrooms. And, you know, again, that's helping to give our students critical thinking skills so that they might be able to decenter, deconstruct some of these things themselves. So students learn even today about the roots of the American government, and the author continues, using the classics to justify the institution of, and in my words, bondage. And to use the classics to erase or to attempt to erase indigenous nations that were already established on this land. And so again, this is an erasure of an entire people's contribution, thousands and thousands of years of people's contribution. And this is the type of thing that we need to go ahead and work to combat. Again, this author ends this article by saying, recognizing the ways Greco-Roman antiquity has been exploited to establish and maintain white supremacy, naming that exploitation and interrupting it. That's what we need to be focused upon today to try and deconstruct some of the white supremacy in education. All right, so I see we have a caller on our line. Would you, caller, please identify yourself, give your name, where you're calling from, and question or comment?
This is Rick calling you long distance from Germany.
Peace, Brother Rick.
My question is, outside of Egypt, Sudan, and Ethiopia, who was writing in Africa 12,000 years ago?
So I would say it depends on what age you're looking at, because, you know, the Europeans went in and called it the hieroglyphs. However, many of the ancients would have called it the Medunetter, or the divine writing, is what some might translate it. And it depends on what period, but some of those, you know, Medunetter divine writings go back, you know, thousands and thousands of years. And there also are some things that have been found in Ethiopia also. And so, again, it just, I don't know if I have the exact dating of when the ones in Ethiopia, but I definitely know the ones in Egypt go back, you know, thousands and thousands of years there on the pyramids and in other places. So I hope that answers your question, Rick. I'm not sure if you're still on the line.
Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Okay. I wanted you to answer beyond Egypt, Sudan, and Ethiopia. Who else in Africa was writing, and specifically 12,000 years ago?
So I would posit that there, you know, when they talk of the development of humanity, they would put it, you know, the leakies, I remember hearing Ashraf Kwesi said they let it leak out, that you had the first humans there in the Old Divide Gorge, and then they migrated up following the Nile Valley, and that's where you had the interaction water and some of the agriculture, some of the development. And so that's why you would have, you know, thousands and thousands of years ago, some of the early development coming from the earliest humans there. And then you have, if you follow the work of Dr. Shekanta Diop and some of the others, talk of how you had, and again, I don't know the exact dating that Shekanta Diop would put some of the language development that you could, he tied very closely from Senegal and other parts of West Africa to some of the writings of the Ethiopians and of the Egyptians. And so if you look at the work of Diop, then you will be able to see and begin it. I don't have the exact dating of when he would have, you know, traced it back, but he does show a connection between some of the peoples around the African continent to what was happening in that Fertile Crescent area. I hope that answers it, Brother Rick. I hope that answers it. And there are other scholars who also the expansive connection between some of the works of Africans throughout the diaspora to what was happening in the Fertile Crescent. And again, the point that I'm making here is lifting up what the author, Danny Bostic, is pointing out, how a whitewashed history of the ancient worlds is causing a toxic environment for our young folk to not realize the contributions of peoples from around the world. So whether it be Asia, whether it be Africa, whether it be our indigenous brothers and sisters. I remember doing an interview right here on this show. We had a sister from the Wampanoag indigenous nation, Sister Savant Brown, talk about how, you know, her people's culture and work and knowledge go back, she said 12,000 years. And, you know, when you had certain peoples come, they almost, again, worked to erase and obliterate some of the contributions that Native peoples have developed for thousands of years. I mean, even if you look at some of the writings on some of the pyramids, you know, here in the Americas, they go back thousands of years. And so to put some of the, as this author posits, to go ahead and put the classic roots of Western civilization on white cultures, the author says, is an artificial link to whiteness and a toxic combination. And so again, this is one of those points that I think we would do well to work with our students and work with our parents to be able to help bring a broader, more expansive perspective to what is happening in our education today. All right. So again, our phone lines are open. We're going to go to our music break now. And on the other side, I want to lift up another piece coming out of this spring 2021 edition of Teaching Tolerance. Again, if you're interested, you can go to tolerance.org, and where they focused upon white supremacy in education. And I want to lift up another interesting article that I found on the ethnic studies movement. So let's go to our music break. And then when we come back, let's continue the conversation. Again, the phone lines, you know, are open, 202-588-0893. I also, you know, I'm still interested in talking with folk about what's happening with the whole back to school push in your area, because I know that is something that is burning on many fronts. So if it's all right, let's go to our music break, and then we'll be back on the other side of this break.
Thanks for listening to your favorite WPFW shows online, helping us continue our 44-year tradition of jazz and justice programming. WPFW is entirely listener-supported, which means we count on your help to produce and publish the best radio content in the nation's capital. Become a sustainer today by visiting WPFW.org and clicking Donate Now. Show your support for independent radio. We can't do it without you. That's WPFW.org. Now, back to the show.
All right. Peace and blessings to the PFW family. We are on the other side of our music break, and we had such a great show last week with our Black women historians, Dr. Christy and Dr. Kenja. They requested Chaka Khan, I'm Every Woman, and you know, for Women's History Month, I was so moved by that song. I said, man, we need to play that again to honor women who continue to, I think it was the elements, earth, wind, and fire. So they hold up, you know, half the sky. Huh? And so to women, we tip our hat. If I was wearing my hat, I would tip it right now. And, you know, again, women continue to do phenomenal things. There was a recent edition on this teaching tolerance on how women have contributed in so many different facets. And so you could actually check out, it's a special edition that is looking at how women have continued to make so many contributions. I'm looking to continue to, you know, featuring some of the great things that women are doing. In fact, they say that this one is a woman's history month special, where they are highlighting grassroots activism and movements. So if you wanted to, you could go to socialjusticebooks.org to see that focus on women who are doing tremendous work in many different fields of education. So there we have it. You know, Chaka Khan, I'm Every Woman. All right. So I want to continue with this edition that I really enjoyed of Teaching Tolerance. Again, this is the spring 2021 edition. You can check it out at tolerance.org. And they were looking at some of the components of white supremacy in our education today. Again, you know, first half, we were talking about how the classics are tied often to Greece and Rome, and how that's a toxic combination when you don't look at the contributions that other people around the world made to our various systems of learning and disciplines. So that was the first half. I also wanted to, you know, talk with folk about how the back to school push might be impacting your family, or even students in your area. Maybe you're a teacher, maybe you are, you know, a parent, and you have some thoughts on it. So again, our phone lines are open, 202-588-0893. Again, that's 202-588-0893. But what I want to do now is turn to this additional article that I thought was also very interesting. This one was the Fight for Ethnic Studies. Now, this our author wanted to go ahead and demonstrate how you have some curricular positions that are challenging white supremacy. So this is Tina Vasquez. Again, the article is, the essay is the studies. So the author opens up. On the last day of California's legislative session, this was in 2020, if Governor Gavin Newsom vetoed AB 331, this was a bill that would have mandated ethnic studies as a high school graduation requirement. Now, this, the author goes on to continue, was deeply troubling for many. The author continues, educators who have been deeply involved in the fight for ethnic studies for decades were shocked by the development. At the crux of Newsom's decision was continued disagreement over the proposed model ethnic studies curriculum. And the author continues how history was being framed, who was included and excluded, is what the author says. The author goes on to say, while the veto of AB 331 was shocking, the bill was a bold step in attempting to address the persistent erasure that students of color in California experience. The author goes on to point out, Newsom's veto was an unexpected blow, said Dr. Dale Allender. That Dale Allender is the Associate Professor of Language, Literature, and Culture in the Department of Teaching Credentials at California State University. In fact, Allender went on to help was the co-editor of what is believed to be one of the nation's first high school ethnic studies textbooks, Our Stories in Our Voices. And Allender said, you see the same sentiment present in the push for ethnic studies today as you did in the 60s. The recent activism pushed things forward quickly, and people are committed to seeing this through. The author continues, educators like Dr. Teresa Montano, a professor of Chicano studies at California State University Northridge, pointed out that AB 1460, which successfully created an ethnic studies graduation requirement in the Cal State system, was a victory. The author continues, she also is on the advisory committee for the first iteration of the California Ethnic Studies Model Curriculum. This was the model curriculum that was hotly debated and ultimately led to Governor Newsom vetoing. And Montano says that there are no easy wins. When you're pushing against systemic racism, it takes years to actually attain something. And the author goes on, I think one of the reasons ethnic studies is gaining such a foothold right now is because of the Black Lives Matter movement. Many, the author continue, teachers involved in the fight for ethnic studies have used some of this, the author continues, some of the same strategies that led to ethnic studies as we know it. In 1968, the Black Student Union and a coalition groups known as the Third World Liberation Front sparked a movement at San Francisco State College that actually led to the creation of a Black Studies Department and the establishment of the College of Ethnic Studies. And so what the author is saying is, yes, Governor Newsom's veto is a blow. However, we need to understand that these movements don't happen overnight, and it is a marathon, not a sprint, and what we have to go ahead and continue. The author goes ahead and continues lifting up the work of Wayne Awe, who is a long-time, long-distance movement activist around ethnic studies. Wayne Awe is a professor at the School of Education Studies at the University of Washington, Bothell, and an editor of the social justice teaching organization Rethinking Schools, which last year published Rethinking Ethnic Studies, a book offering examples of ethnic studies framework, classroom practices, and organizing at the school, district, and statewide levels. Awe said, for some people, ethnic studies is purely a different version of multiculturalism. Awe goes on to continue and say, ethnic studies is supposed to help us challenge the white supremacy in our curriculum, not aid it. And then the author goes on to say, there are some key characteristics that make up ethnic studies, and I want to present them here. In fact, let me give you what the definition of ethnic studies is that I skipped over. Again, I'm watching the time. The time is always against us. But the author opens early on and gives the definition as the critical an interdisciplinary study of race, ethnicity, and indigeneity with a focus on the experiences and perspectives of people of color in the United States. And so again, it's an expansive view that looks at multiple contributions from people from of the global majority in addition to what is the standard. Now, the characteristics that Montano continues to talk about are that make ethnic studies distinct from other disciplinaries is one, the history, where it came from. Two, it centers on race and that of the people of the global majority, people around the world and their contributions. And three, the struggle against racism. And that's what separates ethnic studies from others. And, you know, again, if this is of interest to you all, again, I'm welcoming comments. So, you know, folks could give us a call on this or, you know, we were talking about the classics or, you know, the back to school push 202-588-0893. All right. Let me continue with this article by Tina Vasquez. All right. And again, this is the fight for ethnic studies. She continues, the academic and social benefits of ethnic studies are well documented. In 2011, the NEA, the National Education Association, found that when students of different ages are exposed to ethnic studies, they consistently experienced academic achievement, high levels of awareness of race and racism, and positive identification with one's own racial group. Another study, the author continues, a 2016 study by scholars at Stanford Graduate School of Education found a high school ethnic studies course boosted attendance and academic performance of students at risk of dropping out. And that was published in the Stanford News. The author points out, the author continues there, you know, even if you look beyond some of those studies, the author says you can look at anecdotal evidence to talk of the benefits of ethnic studies. Here is one of them. The author continues, all of a sudden, there is a fire in the hearts of those students and in their bellies. You can see them connecting the dots. And this is what Wayne Awe said. There is immeasurable value in that. You see kids start to value themselves and their communities. And they start to envision a different future for themselves. And so, again, the author goes on to point out, in fact, one of the other benefits from the Stanford study, the author says there is a 21% increase in attendance found when a group of students were enrolled in ethnic study courses. That was from the Stanford study. All right, the author, and I'm watching the time, so let me try and wrap this up. The author goes on to continue, best practices beyond curriculum. While the benefits of ethnic studies are clear, the path forward remains murky. In 2010, when former Arizona Governor Jan Brewer signed HB 2281, prohibiting schools from teaching courses designed primarily for pupils of a particular ethnic group, this is one of the other setbacks that the author is citing. However, the author says that sometimes, as Willie Jolly might say, that the setback is a setup for a comeback. The author goes on to continue, when Governor Brewer signed that law that prohibited schools from focusing upon a particular ethnic group, it ignited a larger movement across the Southwest, prompting educators in Texas to begin fighting for ethnic studies in K-12 education. All right, then the author goes on to cite teacher activist and teaching tolerance advisor, Tracy Castro Gill, the executive director of Washington Ethnic Studies Now, went on to say, there's a fundamental shift that needs to happen. First, in the understanding that we're not here to create better workers. We're here to create better engaged citizens and better engaged citizens and humans of the world. And Castro Gill goes on to say, you can't do that with tidy little roles in your classroom where children only speak when they're spoken to. It's a lot about interrogating and deconstructing the white Eurocentric norm of the classroom and expectations of education. Again, I'm going to read that sentence again. I think this is part of some of what is consistent across many of the articles is this point right here. It's a lot about interrogating and deconstructing the white Eurocentric norm of the classroom and expectations of education. And so, let me continue with the article before I give my commentary. Co-chair, the author continues, the co-chair of the Sacramento State Ethnic Studies Teacher Training Credentialing Consortium, Adler facilitates and provides professional ethnic studies and social justice development for teachers. And Adler's advice is, to anyone who wants to teach ethnic studies, that first they have to engage in a process of self-study and grow through their own ethnic studies journey. So we have to do our own work before we go ahead and look to engage with others on this particular point. And again, this is Dr. Dale Adler. Adler goes on to continue, when you promote ethnic studies, it has to be done programmatically and personally. The work must be done in community because it is more than just readings and tests and papers and presentations. Ethnic studies is rooted in civic engagement, service learning, and community collaboration. This has always been about being out in the community as much as it was being in the books. And so again, I want to just add my two cent on this article, which again, I think is fascinating to see how right before our eyes, there is still this raging debate on, you know, who is included and who is excluded in our educational curricula. In fact, I remember in reading one of my education books, folk talked of trying to take the politics out of education. However, we see that education is very political and folk have vested interests that they want to push, and they use education as a way to do that. And what I really appreciate about this article is that, you know, that Tina Vasquez wrote is the importance that is stressed around deconstructing the Eurocentric norm of what's happening in classrooms, because oftentimes, just as we saw with the other article, these things are looked at as the foundation and as the only contributors or the only way to look at it. In fact, we're going to have to get on the show, brother who helped to develop the whole philosophy of Afrocentricity, Dr. Malefe Asante, who, you know, again, says we have to shift our worldview to be more expansive, to shift it away from the Eurocentric norm. All right. So I'm watching the time. There even are so several other articles that I wanted to lift up. Sometimes it just takes you longer than you want to lift some of these things up. There's a great article on, you know, what it means to be an anti-racist teacher. They look at mathematics in context, the pedagogy of liberation in mathematics. So again, if you are interested, pick up the spring 2021 edition of Teaching Tolerance. And I think you will have a good read and really enjoy it. All right. So again, I want to thank you, all of our listeners, for joining today's show. We had to go back to the basics to look at this whole issue of white supremacy in our education, because many folk don't consider how this is being used to maintain the status quo and push indoctrination. And that's why we are so glad that you have joined us here on You Must Learn, but we focus upon liberatory education as opposed to indoctrination that is pushed by so many others. And so again, thank you to all of our listeners. Again, I want to thank all of our sponsors who helped WPFW, as you know, we are 44 years and going strong. And with our listener sponsors, we hope that we will continue to keep pushing for 44 more years at least. And so again, thank you so much to everyone who has joined us. And before we go to our outro by the phenomenal Nina Simone, I just want to go ahead and thank our PFW family. So this is Baba Ize signing off. Again, if you want to look at some of the Today in Black History, you can go to @Ayize, @AYIZES. And so, again, I say, until we touch again, love more, shine more, be more. Peace. We're going to our outro music now.
Something.